Okay, I'm back. It looks like everybody else is, with the exception of possibly Frank. Frank, are you there? No, he seems to have got misplaced. Anyway, we'll get going and he'll be right back. Okay, good afternoon. This is the Dunaskena teleconference for May the 10th, 2009. My gosh, how time flies. My disclaimer is my name is Benedict Howard. I'm not a doctor. I'm not in any way qualified to give any medical advice. I cannot talk about cures. However, I can talk about my 7 years of personal experiences with the Skena and the testimony I've heard from others and the teachings that I've received from the Russians and Professor Ravenko. The information and testimonies I share on these calls is based on what I have personally seen and heard, and your participation in this call is recorded, and I will be using new pieces of material for ongoing testimony and case studies. These calls are not a substitute for seeking advice from a medical doctor. Good. And let's see, Frank's still not back. So what I'm going to do is, Edna, I'm going to begin with you. Let me just move down to my page here. And welcome, Frank. And Edna wrote, number one, overall time, 21 hours, plus I keep the Danaf on my abdomen and pad on lower back at night. Good. Dose time, 24 seconds to 2 minutes, or over just over 2 minutes. And number three, the brush time each day, 30 minutes. Number four, sticky and loud spots are the upper chest, the neck, the groin, the stomach, the low back joints of the bottoms of the feet and the palms. And point number five, on the scale of 1 to 10, beginning end of the week, started at a 7 and at end of 3. It got worse in between, but today it's the best I've had. Great. Number six, body changes. Toes and feet seem less swollen, and not so much redness today either. And on Tuesday, my naturopath tested me and said that my immune system was improved, as well as the fungus being less. Point number seven, other. I continue to zap the fungus with my frequency generator with the acupuncture probe. And just a note there, that's not the Danaf. And I also use a Diadense tea on the ankle at 200 hertz. I'm up to 4 drops of MMS a day. Wow. And on Tuesday, my naturopath started me on a homeopathic RNA DNA. And also, I started to culture cabbage juice on Friday to help my regime. Yesterday, I was fighting a sore throat, so I went back on colloidal silver and oil of oregano. Excellent, Edna. You've done great. You've pulled yourself through this one. On the dose times, I have a quick question. You mentioned 24 seconds to 2 minutes. Are you talking about the 6-point cell, or are you talking other places in your body?
Sorry, 6 points. I was on mute. Sorry.
Okay. Okay, 6 points. Good. Okay. So, looks like things are moving for you again, Edna. Well,
yes.
Done.
Yes, I'm very pleased.
How's the pain levels tonight?
Well, it's got owie a little bit again since Hilton started priming my foot, but not severe like it's been. So probably went up to a 7 again, but it'll calm down. I put the Danaf on again now on my ankle. I really find that helps for the pain level.
And putting it on where on the ankle?
Just below my ankle bone.
Okay. Yeah. On the inside or outside of the
on
foot?
On the outside.
Okay.
Is that the right place or not? Seems to be working anyway.
That's the bottom line. Right, right.
Yeah. And then all afternoon I had the NAS on my other foot too, so yeah, I keep them on most of the time. I'm doing something. So.
Okay, good. Did you have any of the laser work done this week?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Yeah. And how much of that did you have?
I had 3 treatments.
Okay. So is that helping this whole situation too then? It must be.
I think it is because I did stop for a week and things got really out of hand. So that's why I thought, I'm having more than what they would usually do, but I said this is chronic. It's not something that's just acute, you know, and so the chiropractor agreed with me that because of that I probably needed more. So I think maybe this week should be enough, though. I'll do this week and then reassess.
Okay. Good. Do you have any questions of us, Edna?
No, I think I'm okay tonight.
Okay. That sounds like great. Wow, you have really, really, really turned around in the last 2 weeks, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And looking at that now, how would you assess what was it, a combination of stuff, or what do you feel did the most for you, or what happened? What changed the situation for you the most?
Well, I'm not 100% sure, because when you do a lot of things, you don't know. But when you're in pain, I don't feel you can wait 6 months to see whether something's going to work or not. You know, you have to sort of pull out all the stops. I've had much prayer. And as you know, I've done all these other different things. But I do notice the difference when I do use the diet entity on the 200. So. And when I use my other frequency generator on the higher frequencies too, I notice that helps with the pain too. So I definitely... But I like the idea that with the diet ends, I mean, it's portable. I can take it with me wherever I go, you know. And so that's great.
And the frequency generator for the big block of machinery, is it? Or what model is that you use?
It's not very big, but it's just that it's not something you would carry with you. Because you have to plug it in. Well, I guess you could use it on a battery, but you have to plug it in and, you know. It's just not convenient to go too far with it. But on a daily basis, I'm still using it because I can put that right on the fungus to get right at it, you know?
Yes.
So it's a little more comfortable probe. It's a little more rounded. It doesn't sort of affect the skin as much as the one with the diadems. But, you know, for traveling, I still use the diadems one, too, if I want to zap with it, too. So... I think it's great.
Great. And what model frequency generator is that? Do you recall?
No, I don't. It's a Biotronics one.
It's a which one?
It's made by Biotronics.
Biotronics, okay.
Yeah. And they're out of Toronto.
Okay.
No, I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, I just wanted something on it, so... Wow, that's really good. Are you still bathing your feet in the MMS?
Not every day, but I apply it if I don't soak it. Sometimes I found when I soaked it that I got a burning feeling the next day on my foot, and I know that's not necessarily bad, but then I sometimes just put it on with a cotton ball several times, and either that or soak it. Every other day probably I soak it.
So when you say you put it on a cotton ball, is that the 15-5 mix? Okay.
I found that two drops per cup of water that I'm using, like two drops with the activator and so on, was about the right dilution for me, for my skin.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. So you're saying you put two drops of MMS and 10 drops of the acetic acid in one cup of water?
Yeah.
Okay. So you activate it first and then put it in.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so if I want to soak in more, then I make more accordingly. And yeah, and that works for me.
Mm-hmm.
Without being too harsh, you know.
Right. And you're using the colloidal silver, I see. What type of colloidal silver are you using?
I have my own little generator that I make it with.
Okay.
So... Yeah, and I had been taking it faithfully, and when I went on the MS, I kind of went off it, and then when I started fighting this with my throat, I thought, well, I'll go back on that. So I don't know whether that's contributing to having a good day. Plus, I had quit taking the oil of oregano because the Chinese doctors say that I had too much heat in my blood, and that was why my foot was getting hot. But I went back on it, too, because I find a couple drops in your mouth kills all the bad stuff. So.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Edna. That's a wonderful breakthrough. Now, I think, you know, so let's see. You used it for 20 hours, 21 hours, and you've been using it mostly on the abdomen and the pad at night, okay?
Well, I do my brushing, though, too. And then,
right.
And then at night, Hilton does my feet with the 77, and then we finish off with the 10.
Mm-hmm. So when you say at night, you're not putting the pads on your socks at night. You're just putting them on there for a certain time before you go to bed. Is that what it is?
In the evening, he actually takes and does when he's watching his sports. And I lay down in the chest field. He just does my bottom of my feet with the 77, and then we dose with the 10 hertz after that.
Okay.
And then at night I put the pad on 77 on my low back, because some of this can be nerves affecting my foot from the low back.
Sure.
And then I put the Danas on my stomach at night.
Great. Okay, I think I got you covered there on questions, I think. We have Dave on the call this week. I asked him to come in, and Edna, you have, I believe, talked with Dave before, correct?
Yes, I have.
Yes, okay.
He's very helpful. Appreciate
he's going to be, I'm going to ask him some questions just as soon as I get done with Frank, if that's okay, Dave.
Sure.
Do you have any comments for Edna?
We communicate enough by email. I think we're kind of up to speed. If she has a question, she usually shoots it to me, and I try to get back a plausible answer. So.
Oh, excellent. Thank you, Dave. Yeah, that's beautiful.
And I thank him, too. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And that's what I do. Thank you, too, Benedict and David, because it's the encouragement that keeps you going when you're having the rough times, you know?
Uh-huh.
And that's what
don't
we need
not.
Each other. Yeah?
Right.
I did think of one thing, Edna, that would apply to your situation. One of the questions I ask, and I've got a good background in chemistry, was can I take colloidal silver and MMS together, or will I get a chemical reaction that I don't expect? For example, would I end up with silver chloride?
Right.
And the answer to that is no. They are. You can take them compatible. They are compatible together. They don't interact. You don't get a chemical reaction in the body. It's something unexpected. So that when you take them together, each does what it's supposed to do. So,
okay.
When my wife has just gone through a bad bout of the flu, and she took each of the two four times a day. So.
And how much of the MMS was she taking then when she took it four times?
Four drops, four times a day. She'd never taken it before, and I
really?
Was. I was a little concerned that. And we walked into this over a period of a couple of days. I tested her with two drops to see if we'd get a healing response, and we didn't get anything unusual, so I increased it to three, and then four twice a day, and then no response, so we went to four drops four times per day. That's four of the MMS with 20 of the citric acid. And then she was taking a teaspoon of colloidal silver with each dose of MMS.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And she felt, by the way, this is the sickest she's ever been in her life. There was a night where she was she confessed afterwards, she was one breath away from saying, take me to emergency. I've never seen her this sick. And felt the thing that turned the corner for her was the MMS.
Was she having trouble getting her breath? Was it in her chest?
It was in her chest, yes.
Yeah, okay. I have a friend like that, too. I must introduce her to the MMS then, too.
And the MMS was the thing that she thought helped most of all. The next morning, she said, I don't know how I would have made it through the night, but that seemed to, I seemed to turn the corner as soon as we went to the MMS.
Uh-huh. Great. Thank you, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to jump in with Frank here, and he's been like so thorough and so committed to this training. It's just been beautiful to be part of this with you, Frank. And all of the stuff that you brought to light and all the stuff that I've been learning from you, too. So Yeah, I'm going to read through what you sent me, and we'll get to some of the questions you ask in a moment. Okay, Frank wrote, I remember hearing on one of the past teleconference calls someone comparing the Donath to a Bob Beck DT6. Regarding mood enhancement and overall feelings of well-being, I must say that the Donath is far much more effective than the DT6 in my experience. No doubt that I'm still in the midst of a healing crisis, and I think that my digestive organs have shut down and closed down for repair.
Uh-huh.
I want to talk about that in a moment. This week I decided it was time to focus my attention on my three main problem areas, the collarbone, the liver, the spleen, the pancreas, and maybe the pelvis. Around the collarbone, I dose the problem spots and usually take forever to come up to a dose. This procedure I used for dosing is as follows. If a point did not dose out in 30 seconds, I would prime the spot with the other frequencies on my diadems, spending about 5 to 10 seconds on each area and then returning to the MED frequency. Many times just one or two runs up and down the frequencies will bring the spot up up to the MED time, but it is all I can do right now. Excellent. Overall time, number one. Overall time since Sunday, 19 and a half hours. Dose time. Okay, we got, and I'm going to just, a high of 97 seconds on the left eye, and a low of 33 on the left eye a few days later. Interesting. Interesting. All of your dose times went down on the 6 points. By 5.9. How interesting. I'm going to read these through because this is good for you guys to hear. Okay, on Sunday morning, 5.3, Frank dosed his eyes. His left eye was at 97, the right eye at 81, his left nose at 69, and the right nose at 36. By Saturday evening on 5.9, the left eye had dropped from 97 to 33 seconds. The right eye had dropped from 81 to 34 seconds. The left nose had dropped from 69 seconds to 25. And the right nose rose up from 36 to 59. Excellent. So you're adapting and regulating. That's what that's really telling us. Number three, brush time, about 1.5 hours each day. The sticky and loud spots are under the armpits, which is sticky, underneath the forearm by the elbow, which is louder, front and back of the armpits are louder, the abdomen is louder, spine reflex on feet tends to be sticky, shoulders are louder, top side, inside of the thighs are louder, and side of the hip joint is louder. Point number five, pain at the start, end of the week. Minimal pain in the lower back, left side in the mornings, which subsides quickly. Great. Number six, body changes. By Friday morning, after using my Donath for 3 hours, I felt extraordinarily good. And point number seven, questions. What is the practical value of the diadem screening mode? And can this mode be used for the three pathways or when trying to find the best spot in an area to work on? Okay. You know, when you've got a Donath, the Donath is way easier to dose than the diadems. And so I don't use the diadems for dosing. But if you only have the diadems, you may know the regime where you go down into the 10 hertz, you screen, and you get a delta reading, which is an arbitrary reading, but it's basically telling you which place has a higher resistance if you survey around. That delta reading on the diadems takes like 5 seconds to come up. Then you click the frequency up button once, and that takes you up to 20 hertz, puts you into the MED version. The MED now is kind of complicated on the diadems because it's twofold. When you place it on the highest delta reading that you would that you observed in the screening, the diadems will ring out after a number of seconds and tell you how long to leave it on. Okay, let me start again. When you put it on to give you a dose, it will sit on there and ring out for after whatever seconds it is. Then you leave the diadems in the same position for the same amount of time. And you have to count this, and you have to watch a watch, because actually the diadems doesn't actually give you those readings for some reason. So here's the thing with the diadems. Because the delta readings only take 5 seconds to come up, the initial readings, in the screening mode, you can locate a position quicker than you can with the mass. However, the dosing, when it comes to dose with the diadems, is way more complicated. And so what is the practical value of the diadem screening mode? The answer is that you can locate the asymmetry digitally. You can also locate that asymmetry just by listening to the sound of the device or where it's most sticky. You'll find those exactly the same spots. And can that screening mode be used in three pathways? Of course. In fact, what I need to send you is I do have a video that I made a long time ago on the three pathways protocol with the diadems, and I'll get that to you and you too. So you can watch me doing that down a guy's spine.
Okay, thanks.
And, I'd forgotten that I need to get that to you guys. So that's basically it. I think overall, the diadems is useful for doing the three pathways because you get a lot of empirical data, a little more so than you would with the DNAS. But overall, I much prefer the DNAS for dosing because it just doses really easily. And you don't have to fiddle around with buttons to get it to work. And why do you teach that a person... Okay, here's another question. Why do you teach that a person should brush for some time, as in days or weeks, before the MED can be effective? The reason for that, Frank, is simply from the perspective of priming the body. When the MEDs take a long while to come up, as you have been discovering, you're basically going in there and giving a bunch of different frequencies, and then the MED time is reduced significantly. It's the same with the priming, so that's why I'm saying brush and prime for days or weeks, and then you've got really effective, quick MED times, hopefully on most of the body. So that's the reason for that. You want to charge up and prime up and get those cells as charged as you can, just like the battery, and get them really, really jump-started. And it's quicker to do that with the DNAS unit at the high speed. Now, with the diadems, you've got different options on it, because the diadems now gives you, you can prime at different frequencies, and so you can prime at different intensities, basically. And so, like on the professional units, and I'm going to answer this, some of the questions you asked later on, we've got plenty of time, around the professional units. And so on the professional units, they will also, which becomes a little confusing, is that the professional Ritons and the ENOT units all dose at around 60 to 90 hertz, depends on the model. So the dosing is not done at the calming 10 hertz that you have on the diadems and the DNAS units. So actually the dose does deliver a slightly different, will deliver a different outcome at the higher frequencies than the very calming 10 hertz frequencies and 20 hertz frequencies of the DNAS at 10 and the diadems at 20, which is the speed or the frequency that it does its dosing. So when you move to the professional units, you can adjust on some of the units, you can adjust the frequency that you dose at. So you could wind it all the way down, like on the Ritons, it goes down to 15, it doesn't go down to 10 hertz. You could dose at a 15 hertz if you wanted to. or you could dose at the top of the frequency spectrum on the Ritams at 351 hertz. So, but the default is at 90.1 hertz on the Ritam units, and on the ENART units it's at 60 hertz. So those different manufacturers have chosen from their research the default frequencies that they consider to be the most effective. And so that fills us up on that one, and then Frank asked some more questions. Last week when we were talking about different situations, I suggested that I would send Frank the Mark Squibb site, which I know that Dave has had a look at, and Frank wrote this. Thank you so much for forwarding Mark Squibb's website. Can't believe the volume of relevant information on those pages, and I hope to have some time to read this site and take advantage of whatever I can. Would like to hear more about ENART scanner at some point. How do these devices compare to the line of written devices? And what are the ENART's outstanding points that differentiate these devices from other scanners? Are they hugely expensive, and do you offer training free or otherwise with the purchase? I know that I still have much to learn about the scanner therapy, and have heard what you have said about all scanners working, and that you found that all the bells and whistles are not needed to give or receive a really good session, but as most humans, I like to reach for the stars, and when involved in something like this, as Gurdjieff would say, go whole hog and pay for the postage too. Okay, I'm going to give you the most can't ENART information, and it's different from the cosmetic. As far as I can understand or unravel, the reason why ENART, which is LET Medical, which is run by Alexander Karasev's company, the reason why they broke away from the clinical trials and the written units is because they wanted to continue with the Dr. Karasev's original intention for the scanner, which was not to have a whole load of protocols, but make it easy for people to use, or available for people to use, just ordinary people. And I think, as far as anybody is concerned, I think the DNAS people have really satisfied that mission statement really, really thoroughly in the way they've designed the DNAS, an easy to use and effective unit. The latest of the ENART models are the M and S series. There's a 906, 907, 911 M and S series units, which just came out late last year. And you may have heard me talking about on one of the other calls about the 911M, which is the top, as I understand it, is the top of their new line. And the difference between this line and the other cosmetic and the other lines that they've carried previously is this. When they investigated what it was in different manufacturers' scanners that was giving different results, they found that the most important criteria in the signal coming from the scanner was that differentiated from one unit to another was the what's called the first phase voltage, i.e. how much voltage is coming out in that first phase of each cycle. In different scanner units, different manufacturers and designs had different first phase voltages, and apparently that first phase voltage determines whether that scanner is going to be good for skin or bone or muscle or organ or different tissues. And if you think of it like this, well, this is how I think about it. The first phase voltage is kind of like a slap if you clap your hands together softly or if you clap your hands together loudly, if you hit them, clap them really hard, they sting, but but if you clap them softly, that is kind of like a low first phase voltage. Versus if you clap your hands hard together and it's a large clap, then that's a high first phase voltage equivalent. So, looking at that analogy, we see what happens. If you slap the skin gently with your hand and just tap your skin gently versus slap your skin, it's going to go in differently into the skin, and that's what happens on these units. Now, the case of Enoch people on these 9/11 units, appropriately named, these units have the first phase voltage actually adjusts itself according to what's needed. So it is actually a secondary biofeedback loop that's happening in the circuitry on the new Enoch units. And so that basically wraps up some of the engine stuff or some of the electronics or the main component that's in the new Enoch units. So basically what the these new Enoch are doing is emulating a lot of different scanners all in one package. And then from that place, I don't have a way of measuring this, but I would imagine there's going to be different results or faster results with these units than there would be other ones. Now, bottom line, though, is, like, how do you compare these? I mean, where do you compare them to? And basically, you know, it's a matter of personal taste and how you feel your system is progressing. For me personally, I have had, like, this a little bit of a struggle with the 911M unit over the months. The first thing that it did to me was it cut me. One of the edges on the electrodes was so sharp that it cut my leg open. And that didn't exactly please me, and I went and put the electrodes on a polisher I have and really polished off the edges of that and got them all smooth and rounded off. Then the next thing that started to happen when I was using the ENART unit, the 911M that I have, it started to slip out of my hand because of the shape. It's kind of like a reversed wedge, and so it's got a very thin end of the handle and quite thick. You can't really get your hand around it. So that took a lot of adapting to. But funnily enough, though, and despite those negatives, I do still have the unit in my hand, actually, as I speak right now. The reason why I still have it is because it is so refined. You can feel, this is the differences that you will feel between them, and this applies equally almost to the written as it does to these Enoch units. Is that when you place one of the written or the Enoch units on the body, the signal is different than coming out of the NAS or the Diadems units. What I mean by different, the quality I would call it, is that the signal is smoother, i.e. it's not like hitting so hard. And so when you're using it, it's very, it's like, it's smoother, it's more gentle on the system. What I've more recently doing, because, you know, I've been playing with the DNAS for so many years now, I've really been using the written NT and the Enoch 911M on myself more and more in the recent months, because I'd really wanted to try to establish how to describe the qualities in the units. And thank you for this question, because it's putting me on the spur of the moment to give you answers. Totally appropriate timing. Thank you, Frank. So the written unit, by comparison, let me compare these to the DNAS first because it's easier, but the written unit and the Enoch unit, the signals are both smoother. The interface, i.e. the LED screen that is on the written unit versus the LED screen that's on the 911 unit, they have totally different ways of getting into the machine and then making adjustments to them, and I'll move into that in a moment. The Enot 911M has quite a good screen interface. It's large enough that I can read the initial readings, which is the reading that you get when you initially put it on the skin. This is the advantage of these professional units compared to the Diadens unit, where if you're screening with the Diadens, it takes 5 seconds, versus with the written units or the Enot units, you get a screening number as soon as you apply it to the skin. You put it on, and you've got the number. And so it gives you, you can survey the hot spot or the asymmetry way, way quicker with these two units. So that's a huge advantage when you're looking around. What it turns out for me, practically speaking, is that I always start when I'm working on somebody with two DINAS to push the whole body down and listen and take a mental inventory of where the loud and sticky spots are. Then I'll come along and I'll start to put pads and I'll start to attach maybe the DINAS units to those sticky points, maybe under the arms and maybe in the groin or wherever it is, and just leave them there, and then I get to work on the rest of the body. That's when I start to bring out either the Enot or one of the written units. And then I will start to survey, I will start to do the spine work with the Enot because it's got such a big number, which it's easy for me to read. I mean, the number is like, I don't know, it's like a 100-point font on the screen versus the written unit, which is like kind of small. It's like a 12 or 14-point size. And so actually I prefer the Enot for that reason. And then, so when I'm going down the spine, I'm taking readings. Okay, we need to dose here. I will either then leave the Enot on there in a diagnostic mode, which is like the, it's like being down in the 10 hertz screening mode on the Diadens, or it's like being in the 10 hertz mode on the DINAS, and I will just leave it on there and dose that spot. Now, if I have a whole bunch of, or if I have a very high reading somewhere going down the spine and I've already dosed it, and then I've got lower readings going down further down the spine, I will then grab one of my DINASes, which has probably been on an area, say, for 10 or 15 minutes by now, and I can take it off there. It's primed that area sufficiently, usually. I then put that DINAS onto that hot spot just to support it at the 77 hertz. So, you know, when you have multiple scanners, there are many more things that you can do once you get proficient to speed up the whole process and back up what you've been doing, what you've been seeing and reading from taking those very quick readings. The disadvantage of the Enot unit, now it does come with, as I found out later, it does come with different head electrodes. The one they sent me has a very wide, flat electrode, which must be 2.5 inches wide by about an inch thick. Maybe, yeah, 2.75 by about just under an inch, it looks like. And so it's quite a wide area to be sampling. So you actually, and the reason for this, as I grogged out later, is that the Enot is measuring a much higher bandwidth of information coming from the skin than, say, the DINAS or the Diadens. And you can feel that when you've got it on. You know how when you're using the Diadens sometimes, or the DINAS, and you've got it in priming mode, and you'll feel the electrics moving around and then rotating somewhere and then moving to other places? Well, that sort of sensation is way more prevalent in the Enot. There's way more numbers being crunched and more adapting and regulating biofeedback going on in those units. I forget the bandwidth, but I think there is somewhere on one of the blogs or over the forums that Enot or LET has, and they talk about the bandwidth of the units. It's very much higher than the DINAS, and understandably that's what they're charging for. Moving on to, okay, so basically to summarize what I've been saying about the Enot 911M is that it's really handy for taking on-the-spot readings and dosing very, very quickly. In addition, it has several other functions in it which are kind of complicated to explain, but essentially they are variations on what you're doing when you change the frequency of the diadems on a start. Supposing Edna and you, Frank, have been using probably David too, you've been using the diadems at different frequencies because you're getting different results. Well, what happens when you do that, you stimulate the cells very, very quickly and effectively at those different frequencies, and so when it comes to dosing afterwards, it'll dose in way less time. On the RITM and also on the ENOT units, they have an automatic sweep frequency called FM and FM-VAR. And basically the FM is a frequency modulated sweep which on the RITM units varies from, I think, 15 hertz all the way up to 120, and then it cycles down again. And we mentioned that on the call last week or 2 weeks ago. And then it comes up again to 120 and then down to 15. And that whole cycle from 15 up to 120 and down to 15 again takes about 8 seconds. As you probably maybe heard, I have two years ago, I had dreams about this ENOT model, and they must have been in the design and manufacturing process. And in the dream, what I saw was that the unit would have different frequency bandwidths that it would sweep. And this is particularly interesting to me, although I have not been able to practically use it. The frequency bandwidth spreads, the FM spread that the ENOT gives is not only that 120 to 15, but it has specific, and I don't have the manual in front of me, and I don't remember the values, but they sweep from like 15 up to 30 and then down to 30 or whatever it is, so that they got a tighter bandwidth. And that, to me, makes a lot of sense. And then the other functions on the ENOT, they have, this one would be really good if you were going to be doing like cosmetology and the same with the RITM. They would be really, really good units for that. So the ENOT has, behind the main dosing and constant mode, which would be the high-speed mode on the DANAF, you can vary not only the frequency, but you can also vary the characteristics of the signal. And so that's where they get really complicated quickly. One of the faint features of the ENOT is that the frequency starts on that unit from, I think it's 1 hertz, and then goes up to the 351 hertz. So that down in those low frequencies, you can do some of the brainstem core frequencies as well. So I would imagine these would be really good for concussion and that type of thing, although I haven't qualified that. The RITM unit doesn't go down below 15 hertz, and that's where it locks off. Now, comparing the RITM, moving on to the RITM a little bit here, the RITM version that I'm just about to describe is the version 1NT version 02. On the 1NT version 02 model, which I have in my hand here, I'm just taking it out of what's a really nice leather case, which incidentally the ENOT has a very soft plastic cheap case, which compared to the DANAS is just like, it just doesn't, that nice case, that white case that comes with the DANAS and the diadems, for some reason the ENOT people haven't got that packaging together and it comes in a flimsy plastic case. I have just turned on the Scanner 1NT, and I'm just going to run through very quickly. Let's see, we've got 15 minutes to go. Okay, I've talked on the NT, the screen comes up, and you can automatically increase the power with the plus button and bring that up to very, very high, I mean exceedingly high, and almost the same power as the ENOT 911M. You can place it into diagnostic mode very easily. The interface, actually scrolling through the interface on the RITM NT is easier than on the ENOT. And you can vary the You can vary the on and off through the amplitude modulation and frequency modulation. And then they've got damp functions, which are for infections. And you can change the frequency, as I said, from 15 to 351. And the way that the signal is sparking and how far apart the gaps are between the signals. These are, those different settings are better for inflammations, acute and chronic, and this is kind of interesting. There's been, over the years, they have been changing what they felt were the best properties to use, or best settings to use on different situations. But they seem to have stabilized into some coherent understanding now, and that would be part of the training on there. So there we have it. Those two units, they're really powerful units. I mean, really, you know, if I'd known as much as I know about the infectious diseases, like Dave has been teaching me over the months and you guys coming along afterwards, I really think the way to jump in with these units, with those type of situations, is with one of these professional scanners, because there's so much power and that you can go to very high frequencies, which is what you need for those, for the bacteria. However, we have been able to get results, great results with the NAS, and that just shows us how effective that is. But I think I know that, like with the advanced neuropathies, if those people that had one of the professional units, they would be able to get those neuropathies worked on, and they would get less pain faster with the professional units, no doubt about it. However, you know, when you look at the cost comparisons, you're looking at basically just under $2,500 for the Rutum NT version 02, and you're looking at just under $3,000 for the 911M. And then let's talk about reliability. I know that the Rutum units are really solid, reliable. I have had one for 6-7 years now, and I dropped it and banged it and at times abused it it's always held together. It always worked. Now, the Enot 911M, they've already asked me to send it back because there's a factory upgrade to the chip. So I kind of like look at the whole range of Enot models as more like, you know, they're kind of like thoroughbreds. They need work. They need and not really stable like the workhorses that the Rutum units are. So I think I've said it as much as I can without like going through this transcript and writing other stuff later on. Just one side thing on the Rutum NT unit, it does make itself available to brushing. Not as good as the Damas, but certainly you can brush with it. As far as the Enot 911M with that flat electrode on the head, it's not a brushable machine at all. But there are other electrodes that we can have put in there which would make it more as a brushing machine as well. So there we have it.
Okay.
Any questions?
Ben, would you spell Enot for me?
Yes. E-N-A-R.
Okay.
And, yeah. But I think,
the 911 is the model?
911M is the model. It's the top of the line model that they have. Yeah.
Okay.
And they also have a 906 and a 907. I have a 906 with the same engine without the digital display, and I get so lost in that 906 and that I've given up using it. It's like it just you don't know what settings you are. It's just not clear at all. There's such a plethora of settings in that Enot 911M. There's 10, I think, settings that you can control each one of them separately. So it gets very, very confusing very fast when you can't actually see the unit or where you are in the settings on the face of the unit. At least I haven't worked out how to identify the different lights and things. They've sent me manuals on this, but quite frankly, I don't have the time to read through those manuals, and I've just not much on, you know, being interested enough to plow through it and really understand the 906. But the 911M, I think probably, and I, this is my gut, but I don't know from talking to people, the 911M is probably going to replace the, is it the 705AG that they have there? It's a silver electroded 705 professional device that Enot has, simply because it's got that variable first phase voltage. So it emulates, basically what that unit does, it emulates all of the scanners that have ever been built and automatically adjusts to what is best for the body under that, in that specific position. Good. That was a stream there. Excellent. Okay. Dave, I would love to get, it's been 2 or 3 months since you've come in on the call, and I would love to sort of get an update on where you are, and I know that you had a healing crisis 3 or 4 weeks ago that you were going through. But looking back on where you've come from and where you're going to, how do you feel that the Dynas has helped you in your recovery?
I'm on a protocol that for chronic infectious disease, and diseases like mine are always diagnosed as autoimmune diseases, if diagnosed at all. In other words, they're diagnosed as lupus or Parkinson's or MS or ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's, or scleroderma, fatal skin disease, or sarcoidosis, endometriosis, the whole list of intestinal diseases of the kidney, diseases of the eye. These are the diseases you get, and they never go away. Before you get these diseases, you usually get some warning signs. Also conditions caused by chronic infections. These are complex infections, never caused by a single organism, always caused by multiple, in this case, tiny bacteria. So the warning signs, and most people show up with things like carpal tunnel syndrome, tinnitus, ringing in the ears, allergies, alopecia, discoloration of the skin, dark and light, rosacea, another skin condition, bursitis, tennis elbow. You know, you can have bursitis in your hips or knees or so on. Those are usually some of the first signs. A chronic cough that you get and they never leave. These are all infectious diseases about which medicine knows almost nothing. Well, I have one of these diseases, and what allopathic medicine does, traditional medicine, that which we rely primarily on surgery and drugs, their approach to infection is to run a bunch of tests, and if they find one microorganism, one pathogen, that's what they treat you for. They assume, they've been assuming since 1868 that when you found one bug, that was it. And of course, what we now know, based upon some new studies by National Institutes of Health, is that's completely incorrect. That all these diseases of unknown etiology, unknown origin, if your doctor gives you steroids for it, he doesn't know what's going on. Okay, and ultimately these diseases are all treated with steroids, starting with prednisone, and then they move up to methotrexate, and then they'll go to things like Enbrel, and at any rate, they're all chronic infections. And just to level the playing field, everyone alive has these infections. Every single person alive is walking around with at least 10 bacteria in their body for every human cell. And the reason they haven't been discovered is they're primarily intracellular. These are bacteria that are living inside your cells. They're literally infecting cells. So blood tests are worthless. We don't have any tests for these tiny little bacteria that live inside cells. Well, I've got one of those diseases, and mine was diagnosed because I had this is the first test that showed up positive. I was diagnosed with Lyme disease. Do I have Lyme disease? Yes, I do. My wife has it. Both of my children have it. Unfortunately, about 60% of the population walking around has it too. They've never been tested, and most are not sick. the chimpanzee that just tore the woman apart on the East Coast, tore her face off and bit her hands off, this has positive Lyme titer. So here's a chimp. Does a chimpanzee have Lyme? Yes, it does. Is that why? By the way, there's a term connected to Lyme disease for that kind of behavior. It's called Lyme rage. People diagnosed with Lyme disease, as they progress and become advanced, very ill. One of the most common symptoms, by the way, is chronic back pain, which nobody would ever connect to an infection. But rage, Lyme rage is what it's called, is often one of the symptoms associated with people with advanced, what allopathic medicine calls advanced Lyme disease. So I've got one of these infections. There is a protocol for it. It has not been accepted by mainstream medicine. It's called the Marshall Protocol, and I've been on the Marshall Protocol, which is for the most part a blood pressure medication and 5 antibiotics administered in very, very small doses, starting with 1 and adding a 2nd and a 3rd. So I've been doing this now for 23 months. I've had 2 birthdays that I wasn't supposed to have. In other words, I was diagnosed as terminal, wasn't expected to live to the beginning of 2008. So I had my 2008 birthday, and I just had my 2009 birthday. And what is different about this birthday than all the other birthdays in my life is this is the first one I've had since I've been 15 years old, where I was better this year than the year before. I've been progressively sicker all my life. So here's a protocol that works for these horrible diseases for which medicine has no answer. And I have one of them in my, by the way, in addition to Lyme disease, I've been given 6 or 5 other diagnoses. Labels. These are labels for collections of symptoms. I had, at one point, I kept a diary and my symptom list got up to 50. There are 330 symptoms associated with these disease. And by the way, old age has all 330. Aging looks just like an autoimmune disease when you separate it. So I started a protocol that uses, like I said, a blood pressure medication, Benicar, and small amounts of antibiotics, and gotten better. And the biggest shortcoming of the Marshall Protocol, where it really falls through the cracks, and what defeats 50 or 60% of patients, is the healing reaction, and we've talked about that tonight, the Herxheimer reaction or immunopathology, the response you get when you kill bacteria. What these particular little bacteria living in your cells do is they poison you with neurotoxins. They make metabolic waste products are powerful neurotoxins. Some of them fall into the same category of neurotoxic substances as the venom of the black mamba. They're zinc proteinases. The toxins from botulism, again, zinc proteinases. Well, these things release some of the most toxic substances on Earth when you kill them. When you don't kill them, they're releasing little bits of, because these are waste products, they're excreting small amounts of waste products every day, and that's why we're sick. Bacteria don't make you sick, it's the waste products. So where the Marshall Protocol completely bombs out and why most people can't get through it is as you begin to kill the antibiotics, this is a protocol that's designed to get your immune system working again. As it begins to work, it begins to kill bacteria. And if it kills them too fast, people get so sick, they can't continue. They have so much pain, usually. And it can be joint pain, back pain, any kind of pain. It can be nausea. It can be all kinds of neurological responses, blurred vision and difficulty with hearing and even paralysis in some cases. So most people can't get through the Marshall Protocol because they get too sick. Enter scanner devices. Because I've been doing this now without the benefits of scanner devices. The first 15 months I didn't have a scanner, and I went through hell at times. I simply couldn't deal with the things that were going on. I had to start and stop 3 times. It got so bad that I got so sick I was frightened to start again. Since I've had the scanner, by comparison, it's a piece of cake, because I don't care what the syndrome is, what the pain is. Let's take something that almost every one of my disease sooner or later is afflicted with. And when I say my disease has 200 names, okay? So there are 200 symptom sets that will get you a different name. I've got everything from rheumatoid arthritis, which is 4 million people have, to Charcot-Marie syndrome, which maybe only 50,000 people have in this country. And there are diseases where only 20 people have it. It's all the same stuff. These are all infections by cell wall deficient bacteria. And the Scanar for me has been a godsend because it's allowed me to cope with things like even panic attacks. This is bad neurological stuff. Scanar is a mood. It releases neuropeptides. They are mood elevators. It can shut down joint pain for me in minutes, pain that's been chronic, pain for which I couldn't shut down with antibiotics. I now have a way to deal with most of the kinds of things that I have to get through to eventually get well. And that's my goal, is to eventually get well. Now, here's what I don't know, and I'll just be honest about this. I don't know if I could do this. First of all, I don't know that I could get through the Marshall Protocol without my Scanar. I don't know that it's possible. What I do know is everyone who gets through the Marshall Protocol gets well, no matter what they call their disease. I'm talking about the whole list of fatal autoimmune diseases. I've got a list of 60 diseases that are fatal autoimmune diseases that no one in history has ever gotten through, and people on the Marshall Protocol have done it. They're well. Pulmonary sarcoidosis, first 30 people in history to get well. This is a disease that killed Reggie White, the Football Hall of Famer, and comedian Bernie Mac 7 or 8 months ago. It's a fatal disease. Yet there's a whole flock of people that have done what I've done and got well. Now, could I get completely well with a Scanar without the Marshall Protocol? To be honest, I don't know. Frankly, I don't care. My goal is, I'm 69 years old, and I've been sick since six. I've been having trouble since I was 15, and I was totally disabled at 34, bedridden. So in the end, I got a great education, and I've learned a lot along the way, and it's all irrelevant because my goal is to get well. And this is for me, the Scanar is a tool. I don't want to live without. I would not want to go one day without my Scanar, having lived with it and without it. And I wish I could tell you I could cure cell wall deficient infections without it. With a Scanar alone, maybe. That may be possible. I simply don't know. But God forbid that I lose my Scanar.
Right. Which you did. You did a few weeks ago, and that was like really
panic.
It wasn't. Yeah.
Panic. Fortunately, I had two. I had at least one to fall back on. So, By the way, it sounds like everyone on tonight has both a Dinos and a Diadent. Is that correct?
Yes.
I do, yeah.
I only have a Diadent.
Okay. Oh, you only have a Diadent. Okay. For most people, I think if it's doable at all, I would recommend both. Ben, we once talked about offering them as a package and not offering them any other way, just so people would get it right and get both. But
that's what I'm in the process of actually writing up. Actually, today I started on it this morning. It's just I've developed a whole new spreadsheet for doing that, and I try to get the words in. But I will. It's coming together.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, it's what I've learned from what you've given me, Dave, is that you've given me a clear understanding of this whole process. Your research and the volumes that you know about these topics is just amazing to me, and it's really helped me to really anchor in how to move this stuff forward with people that are in the situation. So, you know, like
everyone has
Edna,
everyone has these infections. By the way, because we have 3 billion, that's with a B, 3 billion different bacterial species on this planet to choose from. It is highly unlikely that any two people on Earth have the same mix, have the same collection. There's a new term that that's come into use in the last couple of years is called microbiota. Microbiota means your own personal collection of bacteria. And it's likely that no two of us alive have exactly the same mix, even in families. And by the way, we do pass these bacteria back and forth as family members. Not readily, but it happens over time. But which answers one of the biggest questions doctors have had about these autoimmune diseases forever and ever and ever, and that is, why do I have no two patients who really had the same symptom set, even if they have meet the criteria, the eight symptoms set out by the CDC to diagnose fibromyalgia? If they have these eight, when I look at the other 20 or 30 they have, nobody looks alike. And why don't they look alike? Because nobody has the same complex infection. Nobody has the same mix of microorganisms. So we're all walking around, and those that are well have a latent disease, which at some point will manifest itself. It simply means that their immune system right now is capable of handling the problem. But when they're 75 or 79 or 69 or 81, at some point, your immune system loses this fight, and then we get this. Then we start collecting these symptoms. But when you're old, nobody gets diagnosed with Chereau-Marin syndrome when they're 80 years old. They're just diagnosed as old. They don't even diagnose them. They just keep writing prescriptions. So everybody loses this fight. I don't think we have to. I don't think we have to lose it ever. Dr. Marshall thinks that if we control these infections, it'll add 20 to 40 healthy years to our life. 20 to 40. And he said, I'm going to find out, because here's a man that started out with pulmonary sarcoidosis, was given 18 months to live, is now completely free of the disease. And he said, look, we'll see how far I can go. He feels that medicine will reject his idea for at least 40 years. And he said, maybe I'll outlive the 40. Maybe I'll live long enough to get my Nobel Prize.
There we go. Yeah, that's beautiful work he's been doing, isn't it? It's amazing. Well, thank you, Dave. That's a lot of information and really, really clarifying to me. Frank, you've been on a similar but not so involved path with your Lyme disease. Does that help you at all, what Dave mentioned?
Yeah, a lot of information there, and just the idea that we're all carrying these bacterias, and I've heard you're never over Lyme disease or whatever complex of bacteria I'm carrying with me, so... Yeah, it just kind of is very inspiring what David said, and helps me to think, well, I'm just going to continue on with my MMS forever. And look into the Marshall Protocol as well. I'm reasonably healthy now. One thing that I've used over the years since I was diagnosed with Lyme, and I was lucky, I guess I somehow the symptoms got reduced through different means, but I've used a Terminator zapper, and I used to wear it on my wrist until I lost it. I wore it on my wrist every day. Whenever my energy would seem not enough or get reduced, I would start wearing my Terminator zapper, and that really helped me. But overall, I'm inspired, Dave. Thank you very much. I mean, I think that's
a certain. I am certain that, absolutely certain, that scanner devices can kill microorganisms that are close to the surface. I know because I didn't know when I was 15 years old that I had a chronic infection, because my first symptom was back pain. I've had back pain every single day of my life until just a few months ago. When I finally reached the point in the Marshall Protocol where I added the third antibiotic, and others ahead of me with chronic back pain, when they got to that stage, routinely saw lifelong back problems go away. I've had four back operations. You know how many worked? None. I've had 12 operations on joints for one thing or the other, and none of them worked, because surgery won't fix an infection.
Right.
And who could possibly imagine that chronic joint pain, like tennis elbow, which is an inflammatory condition. By the way, doctors are taught when a patient comes in with high inflammatory markers, the first thing they're supposed to look for is infections. What the first thing they look for now is their prescription pad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To write you a prescription for an anti-inflammatory without any effort to find the root cause of the disease. But by age 16, I started having chronic yeast infections, chronic fungal infections. And I've had them from age 16 until today. And the only thing that's really been effective continuously is my Scanar device. I haven't been able to eliminate it. Now, this is clearly, by the way, this quote fungal infection I have is resistant to every known antifungal medication. In other words, it doesn't act like a fungus in many respects. And what Dr. Marshall is saying is this is an intracellular infection, and the fungi, the fungus or the yeast, is only part of the problem. It's probably, again, an infection by perhaps dozens, even hundreds of organisms living inside the cells close to the skin. And the only thing doctors ever get when they do a skin swab or a test, the only thing that ever shows up is the yeast. And so they'll throw those kind of medications. They work for a while, by the way. Most of the things I tried worked for a while. But I finally reached a point where a new medication was good for about a week. And I was right back in the same mess. Prior to that, the only thing that worked for me was colloidal silver, which applied topically a couple of times a day. It allowed me to manage it. I was miserable every day of my life, but it was better than anything else until the Scanar came along. Now, this is clearly an infection. These are clearly microorganisms of some kind, and they're close to the skin, and the Scanar squashes them to a large extent. So it does kill microorganisms. The question that I have, and I don't have an answer for, is will it kill these tiny, tiny, tiny cell wall deficient bacteria? By the way, Lyme disease has a cell wall deficient form. So when you attack it, when you throw everything but the kitchen sink at it, its final retreat is to give up its cell wall, crawl inside a white blood cell, usually a macrophage, and hide. And there it is invulnerable to virtually everything except a healthy immune system. A healthy immune system can kill Lyme even in that form inside the cell, even inside the nucleus of the cell, using antimicrobial peptides, which can go right through a cell wall, track down all of these, all 3 billion of these organisms, and kill them. Unfortunately, the bacteria have learned how to turn your immune system off, so you can't make enough antimicrobial peptides to fight back. Using a Scanar device, it's brushing the whole body, has got to take down the whole bacterial yeast complex every time you do it. So, amen. thank goodness I've got one.
Yeah, thank goodness we connected, Dave. I mean, you've been such a resource. Thank you so much for sharing that. And that really, you know, puts me, you know, in a place now where I've listened to the needs of this type of addiction, and we do need to. I'm going to bundle, you know, two DNASs, a DNAS-T and a DNAS, Ritson unit and a DNAS, and the Enoch units and a DNAS, because the DNAS is so convenient to use. It's the one that you would probably use a lot of the time, but for all the fine tuning stuff, those professional scanners, you can't beat them. They're really, really excellent. So, good. I need to run, but if you guys want to stay on the call and continue talking, that's great, but I have to grab another call right now. So with that, until next week, I look forward to talking to you then. And meantime, just keep on rushing, and it works when you work it. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thanks, Dave.
Frank, are you still there?
I'm here.
You're still there.
Yeah,
can I send you some information via email on these? You clearly have one.
Yeah, okay.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm here. Yeah,
okay.
If you want.
My email is, my name is Frank Mead, M-E-A-D-E, and my email...
Spell your last name again, Frank, please.
Okay. Okay, it's M as in man.
Okay.
E-A-D-E. M-E-A-D-E.
All right, thank you. I don't hear that well. That's one of my symptoms.
Okay, and so my email, you just leave off the K, and so it's franmead@aol.com.
Okay, FranMeade at AOL.com.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, I'll send you some information on this. And
I really appreciate it, and everything he said struck home. And, I really hope...
Are you still
hope...
with us, Edna?
Yes, I'm
Edna,
here.
Edna, are you still with
I'm
us?
I'm here, yeah.
Yes, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have Edna and I do correspond, so...
Yeah.
I'll send you some of the same stuff I've as a place to start. I don't think there's any downside to knowing as much as you can about your illness. As great, as powerful an antioxidizing agent and disinfectant and antibacterial agent as MMS is, I don't have any information which would suggest that it can kill cell wall deficient bacteria. Virtually nothing does. They are virtually invulnerable to everything. Can't chlorinate them. You can't pasteurize them. They can, some of them can withstand temperatures of several hundred degrees Fahrenheit, maybe as much as 500. So fat chance in 138 or so that we pasteurize things at. You can take them down to virtually absolute zero and leave them there for a couple of years and warm them up, and they're happy as can be. You can grow them in cultures in Lugol solution, Lugol's iodine. Leave them there for at least 15 months, and they're just fine. They can be cultured in every antibiotic that we know of.
Okay, so then it's up to our immune system then. It's up to strengthening
Nothing that I know of. They can kill one another, by the way, called bacterial sins that are lethal to other bacteria. So they can kill one another. Unfortunately, our immune system cannot make bacterians, but what we can make is antimicrobial peptides, and they've cleverly learned how to turn that off. These bacteria, it's a fairly involved process, and I'll explain it in some of the stuff, but they've learned how to make a molecule that basically turns the immune system off, that part of the immune system that makes antimicrobial peptides.
And does the scanner then turn that on?
Beg your pardon?
Does the scanner turn that those peptides?
No, it does. As far as I know, it does not. But it will. I think it will. It may kill them. There's almost nothing that can survive electrocution.
Uh-huh.
It may actually be able to electrocute them, even inside a sick cell. Once the cells, all of our cells, by the way, are not infected. It's probably a 5% or fewer. If 5% of these or your cells are infected, you're probably disabled. You're wearing an autoimmune label and you're on a dozen medications. In other words, you're very, very sick.
Yeah.
But in the cells that are infected, these organisms have learned how to make a molecule which is then dispersed out into the entire, not just the cell, but it's dispersed throughout the whole circulatory system in the lymph, and it turns off the innate immune system, which is the part of the immune system that makes antimicrobial peptides. And once they gain the upper hand, there's no way out. They got you for life, which is why no one with a chronic disease ever gets completely well. Have you ever heard of anybody with MS getting well? Completely healed, cured. I haven't. If you do, let me know. I want to know what they did, because I'm going to do it too. So these diseases become lifelong. You get them and you can't get rid of them. The Marshall Protocol is an intervention which allows you to stand the immune system back up. And as you're standing the immune system back up, it employs antibiotics which cannot kill bacteria. They're called bacteriostatics. You know, they're minocycline, Bactrim, azithromycin, clindamycin. They're old antibiotics. They're all generics. They're bacteriostatics, and they work by literally getting physically in the way of the bacteria's protein synthesis process. They climb in the they invade the bacterial ribosome, which is the factories that make proteins, and there are several protein exit ports. The ribosome looks like an apricot with a groove down the middle, one side a little smaller than the other. And these bacteria go in the groove, and they attach themselves to atoms at these exit ports. So they're literally blocking the exit port. They're just, they get the bacteria is trying to make proteins and spit them into this groove, and when it tries to spit them out, there's an antibiotic molecule in the way. The good part of that is nobody's ever become resistant to any of these antibiotics. The bacteria have not figured out how to defeat them. So after 30 or 40 years, they still work. But all they do is slow down the process. In the end, you got to get the immune system to stand up and start making antimicrobial peptides. And in the beginning, you must do it slowly. If you do it too fast, you get too sick. And so the Marshall Protocol has worked out this process, which allows you over a period of time to slowly allow the immune system to begin to function. And in 2 to 5 years, people walk away from their lifelong disease forever. Or they quit.
Yeah.
Did you ever use the Rife machine, Dave?
I have three.
Oh, okay.
I have two in my home right now. Dr. Ekman has one.
Okay.
I bought them. I didn't buy them. Dr. Ekman bought them. They're not mine. They're his. I've been his guinea pig for more than 30 years. We've been friends since he was my high school chemistry student. So he's the doctor that's involved in my He's kept me alive by one. He and my wife, by the way, I have to say, my wife above all else have kept me going. And so I've got Dr. Ekman is on the Marshall Protocol. His son is on it. His wife is on it. His brother-in-law is on it. And his PA is on it.
Now, was he sick, or is he doing it as prevention?
No, everybody's sick.
Everybody's sick.
Dr. Ekman has rheumatoid arthritis and type 1 diabetes. And we could give him some other labels, too. Now, a third of the people on the Marshall Protocol have full-time jobs. So if you learn to be sensible about the rate at which you, if I'm going to give you one bit of advice, should you decide to do the Marshall Protocol, the word is slow.
Mm-hmm.
Go slow. Okay. This ain't a race. If you go slowly, you'll probably be able to get through it, particularly now that you've got a scanner. This is an enormous advantage. I posted this information on the site. Other people have called me and have gotten scanars as a result. It's extraordinarily helpful.
So if you go into a healing crisis, then do you do the brushing mainly, or what do you do?
I do both. I brush and I treat. See, I've got a lot of joint pain. Mm-hmm. And so I will treat. And for me at least, the Diadens at 140 to 200 hertz works best for shutting down joint pain.
Okay.
And so I've usually got so many things going on that it's hard to know where to start. So you start someplace and you knock them down one at a time until, you know, with a little luck, I can sleep. So I'm still in the middle of a battle. But a year ago I was at death's door, and I'm simply not now. I'm beginning to have a life. So
praise God.
Praise God is right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
I'll let you go. It's getting late. My time. I go out after dark because I'm still a little sensitive to sunlight. That's one of the things that happens to some people with diseases like mine at some point. So I confine my swimming and spa till evening hours. But I wish you both well, Frank. I will try and send you some stuff. I'll send you my email.
Okay,
if you've got
great
questions, we can talk. I'll send you my phone number. This is pretty much what I do with a large part of every day right now, is trying to help people who have been, for the most part, up until now, hopeless.
Right.
So,
Dave, with this sensitivity to light, is that because of being on the Marshall Protocol or just the disease itself?
it's some of both. People with pulmonary sarcoidosis are almost always horribly sensitive to sunlight. They're shut-ins, basically.
Okay.
That's not the only diagnosis that caused that. Remember, somebody with pulmonary sarcoidosis, the only reason they don't have MS is they got a different mix of bacteria.
Okay.
If they had exactly the same mix of bacteria and they got them in the same order, they'd have exactly the same set of symptoms, but nobody does. So many people who haven't recognized sunlight sensitivity will recognize it when they go on Benicar, which is the first, usually you start Benicar before any antibiotics. You go through 7 to 14 days just on this. It's technically a blood pressure medication, but it also happens to be the only molecule on the planet right now that we know that can turn the innate immune system on. And that's the part of the immune system the bacteria have turned off.
Right.
So you start out with Benicar. Some people will get a healing response just from Benicar. In other words, their immune systems are well enough that a little help, and they start to fight back. And that's a good sign, by the way. That means you may get through this thing in 18 months or 24 months and walk away forever. You know, leave this nightmare behind.
Mm-hmm.
People like me have all kinds of stuff going on that they never ever connected to a disease, and they all came on over the years. You know, got a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And, you know, I thought carpal tunnel was, I knew it was an inflammatory condition. I had no idea it was caused by an infection.
Uh-huh.
And the tinnitus and all, you know, all that stuff. You, each of you can probably give me a list of stuff that you have right now. A lot of it you don't suspect has anything to do with infection. It does. I know when you get done, you got nothing. People that get finished have nothing.
Yeah. So you're saying that it's not necessary that going on the Marshall Protocol is causing that problem with the light then?
In my case, it did.
Yeah, okay.
I was light sensitive and knew it. The last year of my life, I would walk out in the sun and I'd be in the sun for 5 seconds, and if the sun hit my skin directly, it felt like I was being scalded. I had no idea what was going on.
Oh.
And I, someone who had never worn dark glasses, and the light seemed so bright it was forcing me to dark glasses. And then when I started the Marshall Protocol, when I went on Benicar and then added the first antibiotic, I became extremely sensitive. Now, Dr. Ekman has had no sunlight sensitivity at all. His son has. So there's no way of knowing who's going to be sensitive. If you're sensitive, just you don't do the protocol, or you deal with it. And dealing with it means you wear, I wear no infrared sunglasses. They're fit overs, $40 a pair. In the beginning, I had 2%ers. The ones I wore outdoors allowed 2% of visible light to come through. You wouldn't think you could see.
Wow.
It blocked all infrared and all ultraviolet, because both of those will stimulate these bacteria to produce huge amounts of vitamin D and a molecule called capnine, which turns the immune system off. So I went to long sleeves and a hat. And after a while, I even wore gloves during the daytime. I got a pair of work gloves. I walk into a store and they say, "Looks like you've been working in the garden." You know? No, I'm actually I'm sensitive to sunlight. You know, I got my dark glasses on. But
uh-huh.
Now it's after almost 23 months. It's become still wear the stuff. In September will be our 50th wedding anniversary. We're going to go to Hawaii, and I'm going to find out how much sun I can take.
Uh-huh. That's exciting.
And I'll deal with it. I'll do what I have to do. I want to be well more than I'm willing to continue to be sick.
Is the Benicar something you take for the whole time you're on that program?
The whole time. It's the one thing that's, like I said, if I am absolutely certain that God has made molecules out there in his pharmacopoeia, all of these wonderful things that we have on Earth, that will do the same job that Benicar does. We have 48 nuclear receptors. Nuclear receptors are large, complex proteins that basically read the DNA code. And once they read the DNA code, they make proteins and sugars and fats and so on and so forth based on the instruction set. So we can't make anything unless nuclear receptors work. The nuclear receptor that controls the innate immune system, the part of the immune system that makes antimicrobial peptides and most of our white blood cells is the vitamin D nuclear receptor. That's the sunshine vitamin, yes. And unfortunately, it's not even a vitamin. Never was. Not even close to a vitamin. It's a steroid. And all of these milk D receptors are turned on by steroids. We have, you know, the thyroid nuclear receptor is turned on by, well, I won't get into it, it's a long name. It's the daughter metabolite of thyroxine, which your doctor, if you have thyroid problems, you're probably taking thyroxine right now. And if you want to mess up the immune system, mess up vitamin D metabolism. And you, if you do it the right way, you can turn the immune system off. And that's what these bacteria do. They learned how to flood the system with the wrong kind of vitamin D. And mess this nuclear receptor up. And then, worse than that, they learned how to make this thing called capnine, which just has an incredibly high affinity for that receptor site. So it will go in and kick off the molecule that's supposed to turn it on, the key molecule, 1,25-dihydroxy-D. It'll eject that one, park itself on there, turn the receptor off, zero antimicrobial peptides from that particular receptor. And then you're done. There are no other molecules in your body, and there are no other molecules in the pharmacopoeia out there. There are no prescription medications that will turn the nuclear receptor that nuclear receptor back on, except Benicar in a large enough dose. In a high enough dose, Benicar can eject capnine, the thing made by the bugs, and turn the receptor back on.
Now, your wife's on the Marshall Protocol too, right?
Not yet.
Oh, not yet.
My daughter is. Our daughter is.
Oh, your daughter. Okay, I thought your wife was on it. Okay.
My daughter has paranoid schizophrenia.
Right.
You ever heard of anyone recovering from paranoid schizophrenia?
No.
No, you haven't, because it's never happened in the history of the world. They can drug you into a functional state or a zombie-like state if it's really bad. They just... If you've ever been around a paranoid schizophrenic, you understand very quickly you cannot live with them. They will drive you mad. So what they do in mental institutions is they drug them into, they put them on drugs and turn them into zombies. If they're out and semi-functional, we have enough medications now that it can be managed for a number of years, and they can, some of them can have jobs or part-time jobs. They can sort of semi-function, but eventually they get so sick they can't function anymore. I'm watching my daughter get well.
Yeah, praise God. That is wonderful. Well, my son is on the MMS right now, and he's some better. So, but I'm gonna be away with him this next weekend. So I'm taking all the information you gave me, and I'm gonna have him read it. And
as far as I know, MMS will probably kill every virus on the planet. Move away from cell wall division bacteria. It won't kill all yeast or fungus infections because they are also capable. Bacteria have a cell wall that's kind of like wood or cellulose. That's an oversimplification. Yeast and fungi have a bacterial cell wall that's like made out of keratin-like material, like fingernails or hair. But both bacteria and yeast and fungi, or yeast is really a fungi, if you want to use a broad brush, all of those organisms are capable of giving up the cell wall, becoming cell wall deficient, and moving inside our cells. So yeast at some point probably cannot be defeated by MMS. They'll simply go cell wall deficient, like many of the bacteria. But viruses have no such shape-shifting capability. And I got a hunch MMS is going to be lethal for virtually every virus out there. So keep it close. I'm recommending that everyone I know keep some on hand and know how to use it.
Okay. So. Yeah. Well, we shouldn't keep you any longer, but you're a wealth of information, I'll tell you. I've read it, I've listened to you, and I'm still learning.
It's what you get for, you know, I didn't have anything better to do for the last 16 years but read all day. Mm-hmm. I was dying and couldn't mm-hmm. figure out why.
Mm-hmm.
And 30 doctors didn't help me. So I read a lot of books, and then now it's a little easier. Now I can find the books on the internet.
Well, that's one of our problems here too, is to find a doctor that you can work with.
That's probably the biggest single obstacle that people are faced with, is to find a doctor to help. The Marshall Protocol, that website, the new website, curemyth1.org, I think it's .org. It's in a little brochure. I think I sent it to you, Edna, and I'll send it to Frank. Those folks will help you. If you simply go in and register, say, I need to find a doctor in my area, they'll try and help you. If they can't, what you learn to do quickly on those websites is find everybody that's registered on the website and find out where they live.
Mm-hmm.
So you find folks that live close to you, and you can private message them. Say, I found your name on the website. I know you live in such and such a city or such and such a province or such and such a state. I'm trying to find a doctor. Would you mind? You obviously have one, or you couldn't be on the protocol. Would you mind sharing your doctor's name with me and tell me how I can get a hold of them? Some people will do that. Some will not. Mm. But you can usually after two or three tries get somebody that'll give you a doctor in your area who's experienced with this.
Mm-hmm.
If you need help with that, let me know.
That's
a no-brainer. That's easy to do. I helped a lady in Tennessee contact 37 people until we found a doctor. So
really,
whatever it takes. In most cases, by the way, what we found patients who'd been on the Marshall Protocol. Their doctor had taken 3 or 4 patients and wouldn't take any more.
Oh my!
And when we pursued it, what we found is it wasn't because the patients weren't getting well. It was because the doctor couldn't make any money at this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happened again and again and again and again.
Pretty sad.
So you got to find a doctor who's, you know how you do it? You find a doctor that has one of these diseases. They're all very interested and very compassionate. And they'll take
I'm
some
sure.
of them are some of them are taking hundreds of patients.
Sure.
Got to find a sick doctor.
Mhm.
I've done it. I know numbers. So let me know if I can help.
All right. Thank you so
Good
much.
Good night, folks. I'm gonna go to the clinic.
All right.
I know.
Yeah. Bye-bye.